today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
I did explain, you know, I am pretty bullish in what I will go for, but I'm not going to sell myself. I'm not going to sell something I don't have. So I did. I was open with them and said, I haven't shot a wedding before, but I think I can. I think I can do it. And, you know, I said, you can see that, you know, if you like the work that you're looking at now, then. So I was setting, managing expectations from the outset, but also at the same time, I couldn't afford to be that guy that's doing $200, $300 free weddings, you know, whatever, because that's never then going to get me to where I needed to go.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your photography skills. Raymond interviews the world's top photographers in their field to ask questions that will get you taking better photos today. Now, with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, LA Dodger fan, and Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm Raymond Hatfield, your host, Indianapolis wedding photographer, and someone who's just really, really excited about today's interview. It is with Nick Church. Now, you may not have heard Nick Church before, but trust me, you will. This guy went from beginner to pro in just 24 months. And today he's going to share how he did it and some of the tools that he used to get there as well. So this is one that you will really, really love. All right, let's get into today's interview with Nick Church today. He is... Nick is a really interesting guy because he has a very technical background. He knows what he's doing when it comes to, you know, thinking about the technical side. Like, the camera wasn't so much a problem for him, right? Learning the technical aspects of the camera, he understood. So this episode is a lot about business, a lot about business. So, you know, but I asked the questions like, what was, you know, his main sources of photography education? What was the hardest part about photography to learn? I asked about his first clients, right? That you're going to hear all of this stuff, why he transitioned from the very good job that he had to leaving it all and going as a, you know, as a freelance photographer. And what was he surprised to learn about going full time as a photographer? Just to keep you aware of changes that could happen if that is something that you want to do. So we're going to go ahead and get on into this interview right now with Nick Church. Today's guest is Nick Church, a UK-based wedding photographer who until 2014 had never picked up a camera. 24 months later, he left his full-time job and has had photography replace his income. Today, I'm excited to find out how Nick did it so quick. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Hey, no, you're welcome. Pleased to be here.
So before we get started, I know that there's going to be a lot of listeners thinking, I'm not a wedding photographer. This interview isn't going to apply to me. But you make an income off several different types of photography. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's primarily weddings, but professional headshots, a few family shoots and some landscape stuff and a bit of everything, really. Yeah, I mean, I think it's applicable to all.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was going for. Just to have somebody come on who's going to share knowledge that is more than just wedding photography, because I think that your story is unique, going from picking up a camera one day and then within 24 months being able to leave a full-time job, which, as I've read online, was a pretty good job. So knowing that it's more than just wedding photography is going to help a lot of listeners. So before we get into that, I want you to take me back to 2013. Right? You picked up a camera.
2014, yeah.
What were you doing and how did you get your start in photography?
Well, it was, I've always been into art. So I've always been, you know, had a creative, you know, creative outlet. And that's either been music or art, creating pen and ink drawings and things like that. The career that I had was in the software industry. And since moving from being a software architect and software engineer, which is quite a creative job, bizarrely, because you're creating software designs and so on, moving into management, that I found that extremely dry, and I needed to have this sort of creative side as well. It was purely that I was doing quite a lot of traveling with work, so I was going to the Middle East, going to the Far East, and I wanted to take some pictures so that I could draw them when I got back, you know, some just different things to draw. So I bought a Micro Four Thirds camera, just Olympus. and thought, right, better read how this works. Then I had no idea about it was on automatic mode. So I thought, right, on the flight, I worked out how that worked. And just realized it worked out the things that I didn't know. So I didn't know what aperture meant. I didn't know how that affected depth of field. I didn't know how the sensor reacted to different lights. And just so that was a few months of just learning about that. Cause I want to, the way that I tend to learn is to do a deep dive straight away and just get from the ground up. So I'm not one of these people that could just put it into mode X and just start shooting. I'd want to know what that mode is. What have I just done to the camera that's different from mode Y? and that was it. So I was suddenly found that the process of taking those pictures was actually a lot more immediate for a start than going home drawing them. But it was just something I really loved doing. And it was when I came back to the UK after that trip, I started shooting just scenes around my local city, Bristol, in the UK. People said, hey, these are pretty good, you know, these, you should exhibit these. So I did that, and before I knew it, I was just doing some exhibitions in cafes, some galleries, took some stuff in, and I was selling a bit of work, and that was an amazing feeling, just to be able to, you know, when someone comes along with 20 quid, you know, sort of $25 equivalent, and says, yeah, we really like that, we're gonna give you some money for it, and to be rewarded financially for something that you love to create, and it was a creative process, is amazing. But a couple of people that did that also then said, do you shoot weddings? Which I've never shied away for a challenge, so I said yes, absolutely. and then thought, right, I better work out how I'd actually shoot a wedding pretty quickly. But I had about 9 months or so to do that, and yeah, so just spent that 9 months really working out what the differences between shooting a nice church that stays nice and still, or a sunset that stays pretty still, and loads of stuff happening at a wedding where you only get one chance. And so that was kind of interesting learning that process. But I think it was after that first wedding, delivering those photos back and seeing their reaction. I haven't looked at the photos for a while, so I'm not sure if I don't think I dare look at it now. But to see that reaction, I thought, wow, that this is the most rewarded I felt for years, you know. And I thought, right, I've got, you know, I was toying with the idea, could I do this? You know, am I good enough to be able to do that? Could I build up the business to do it? And my son, who was 10 at the time, was listening, you know, I was boring him to tears with this. And he said, just do it. You know, what's there to lose? And I said, well, there's a career that I've had for 20 years. There's our house, you know, but all those things. He said, well, you know, you can always go back to it. And I thought, that's quite hard to argue with, that kind of logic of a 10-year-old. So that's what I did. I thought, right, what would I need to do to get from where I am now to a position that I could leave my current role without being irresponsible to my family and, you know, us all being on the streets? And just set the plan in motion. So had that as a target.
Yeah. So a lot to tackle there, a lot to unpack. Okay. So the first thing I want to clarify, did you say that you bought a camera for a trip and then on the flight that you were taking the trip on, you learned how to use the camera?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Last minute.
But I didn't need it for the trip, you know, right? I mean, if you got children, Raymond,
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can imagine, you know, being on a flight for 10 hours is the most peace and quiet you have that you've had for years. Right. So that was a perfect time to get in manual. So I just sat down and read what I needed to read. And yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Okay. So based on that, when you were reading through this manual, what would you say was the hardest part technically for you to comprehend or understand?
I am very lucky. I do have a background in physics and maths, and so from that, I know how light works. I know how optics, you know, the theory of it. So that whole side of it was just already there. So I already had that knowledge, and that was a great, you know, advantage. But you know, there's about an hour's worth of YouTube videos that you could watch to bring you up to speed on that side. Yeah, it just all seemed to make sense, really. The
technical side of it.
It seemed to make sense. I mean, it is very much trial and error, and I think you do need to then go into the field and see what it's like to try some of these settings out. But once I knew how aperture priority mode was going to work, what my variables were in each of those cases, the classic exposure triangle, those, all that stuff. You know, that that's really the basis of what I felt I needed to be able to go and shoot photos and get and be able to record on that sense of what I had in my mind that I wanted to do.
Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com, and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Right. No, that makes sense. So later on, you said that you, when you got back from that trip, you had a few photos, you started shooting around Bristol, and then you said one thing led to another, and then I was doing exhibitions and selling prints.
Yeah.
There's something in between there. There's something in between the, hey, I took a photo, and now I'm selling prints. So when you say that you're doing exhibitions and putting in coffee shops,
yeah,
was that, I mean, you had a full-time job at this point. Was that on purpose that you would you just approach coffee shops and absolutely ask for prints?
Yeah, absolutely. So that there's, I'm a real believer that apart from maybe 1-2% of people are going to get someone come up to them and say, hey, we're going to give you this fantastic opportunity for no apparent reason that you've not earned. You know, that just doesn't happen to most of us. So for the rest of us, it's legwork and effort. And that is really tough when you have family and you've got a full-time job. It's tough to be able to put the amount of time in that you need. So what I realized was, all right, I've got these photos. I want to be rewarded for this. I want to get that feedback from people buying this, or at least appreciating it if not buying it. So that was quite a drive. I thought, right, where can I do that? So I had a list of things I could do, which was contact all the art galleries around my city, all the coffee shops. I thought all this wall space in cafes, you know, and as it turns out, they will bite your arm off if there's a local photographer with some free artwork that they're going to put on the wall. You know, loads of them said, and in the end, I just had to just pick a selection because they all pretty much wanted it. And so,
what was it that you were hoping to get out of that?
Sorry.
What was it that you were hoping to get out of displaying your photos in a coffee shop? Was it sales, or was it just recognition?
Yeah, recognition and sales. I think you can, you know, with the advantage I've got of having had a career in business and in software, where you have to do lots of marketing, and you know, if you're going to do anything, you have to have a brand, and you have to start growing that brand, and you know, making it a thing. And I think when we start out, it isn't a thing. It's just whether it's your name or whatever you call it, that's just what you've called it. As soon as it, people see it on the wall, they see it on Facebook, they see it on your website, they see it on a business card, it's becoming something that is tangible then. And I think that's all part of it. And I'm not sure I was really making some big intention to think, right, I'm going to get my name across this group of this part of Bristol through the coffee shop. I just knew that if I was going to do anything other than just enjoy my own photography, then I was going to have to start pushing my work out there. And it is pushing, yeah. You know, people aren't going to come and knock on your door and ask for it. You have to,
right,
you know,
even though that's what everybody wants. Everybody thinks that, yeah, about a website too. I think, yeah, that's one of the main things I hear. Like somebody, I literally read the other day that somebody put up a website last week and they hadn't got the response that they were hoping for in terms of bookings. And I thought to myself, like, wow, like 1 week, like, there's going to be a lot of failures in your eyes in the coming future if within a week you don't have a, you know, a successful business. So yeah, that you're absolutely right. You know, you do got to put in that work, and it's great to hear that you went out of your way to figure out, kind of just test things out and, you know, put them up. So at this point, you still had your full time job, right?
Still full time. That's
and
right.
When that couple approached you to shoot their wedding, what was going through your mind in terms of were you ready to leave your job that day, or what was the thought?
No, it was at that stage I was still just going with it, thinking, wow, that's what a compliment that somebody wants me to shoot their wedding. So that was still the thing. You know, if you've got one booking in 9 months' time, you're not gonna in your right mind going on Monday morning and hand your notice in and leave your job. But I knew that was in the place. And before I got to that point, I had then a few more had come along. So by the time I did that first one, I had about four more in, you know, following months, a few months after that. And it was there at that point when I had sort of five or six, I thought, right, you know, I'm at the point now where I'm busy enough as it is anyway, with the children, with work. It's not even a 9-to-5 job. It was a ridiculously busy executive role. I'm going to either need to artificially stop it at maybe what a number, you know, 10 a year perhaps is the most I could reasonably do while not making myself ill with too much, you know, work at the weekend, having no downtime, or I need to go from 10 to a lot more than 10, if I'm going to make it something that I leave my job for. And so that's what I decided to do. I thought, well, I seem to have stumbled onto something. It's something I love doing. I'd love, you know, when I woke up in the morning to go and shoot a wedding, I felt that kind of feeling you get when you do the first job that you love when you're younger. And I hadn't had that for a long time. And I thought, you know, it was addictive and I wanted to do that. And I decided to think, right, how can I make that put that in center stage rather than going back to work on Monday morning and, you know, going through the motions of that part of my life. And so it was just a strategy of how to build up from the 10 or so I had up to the 30 or 40 bookings that I would need to provide an equivalent level of income that I had before.
Right, right. So during this whole process, you're obviously still very new to photography and you're trying to learn as much as possible. And I know that you said that you learn a lot by doing, but were there any other sources of education that you had to master your skills as a photographer?
It was largely looking at other people's work, I think, was I think if you can, in whichever genre of photography is your thing, I think for us all to improve, we have to be able to appreciate what it is about someone else's images. And it doesn't need to be someone that's really well known. It could be someone that's their first image they posted. You think, wow, I really love that part about that image. And to understand what you're seeing, why you think that's better, and understand what your images are lacking that don't create that feeling. If you can understand all of that, then you've got everything you need to actually start doing the things that you're seeing. Because it's the same skills, right? To be able to critique an image well is the same skills you need to actually create an image that's got all those positive points in it. So I did a lot of that looking around thinking, right, yeah, I can see that my stuff's okay. It doesn't really communicate a story as such. And my editing, when you see other people's editing, wow, it just jumps from the page. So I started just listing the things that I needed to know. As I said, time was short. So if it was, right, people are using Photoshop. I've got no idea how to use Photoshop. Next time I'm on a train and I'm going to a meeting, that's what I will do. I'll spend that hour looking at a couple of YouTube videos, working out how to use Photoshop. So by the time I get to the meeting, I could do all that stuff. But I've also then acquired that skill of you know, that I can go back and take some shots, put them in Photoshop and try and recreate some of the same looks that I'd seen. So that was always useful. I've never been one for books. I can read. But I've never been one that thinks, right, I'm going to find, you know, read a seminal book on photography or anything like that. I probably should have done, but I've just that's not the way that my brain's wired up. So it's mostly trial and error, and that was shooting every opportunity I could in a commercial sense. So I wasn't particularly interested in doing loads of shots of the cat because I didn't really think that was going to give me any particular feedback. But there are loads of other opportunities, like every small business needs photos of their products and they don't necessarily want to pay for it, but then you don't necessarily need to be paid for it. So if they do, so for ages, people's birthday and Christmas presents were the things that people were making that I was taking their photos of. And that was how we, you know, but that, and that's still being rewarded for what you're doing and you're getting feedback. Plus you can refer to their website to show your work off and those other things. There's some local history renovations that going on, near me where they were renovating a very old gatehouse to an old mansion. So I volunteered to be the photographer for that. So that was something for about a year that I did, just charting its development from like a ruin to a space that's now used for conferences and all sorts of things. Again, didn't get paid, but the exposure you get in the paper, on TV, because they're showing all the photos and you get a credit every time, it's invaluable. So some of that stuff, you just can't buy that kind of marketing sometimes.
Yeah, and it just feels good. Yeah. I get that. I totally get that. So I want to go back to that first couple who approached you to shoot their wedding, okay? Mm-hmm. I want to know, how was it that they found you? I want to know, how you booked them. Were you nervous, and how did it turn out?
They met me at the gallery. So I was exhibiting this work. So we talked about that, and I did explain, you know, I am pretty bullish in what I will go for, but I'm not going to sell myself. I'm not going to sell something I don't have. So I was open with them and said, I haven't shot a wedding before, but I think I can. I think I can do it. And, you know, I said, you can see that, you know, if you like the work that you're looking at now, then. So I was managing expectations from the outset, but also at the same time, I couldn't afford to be that guy that's doing $200, $300 free weddings, you know, whatever, because that's never then going to get me to where I needed to go.
Yes.
So, and even at that point, my time is so limited. I'm not going to be doing 4 or 5 days of work for free. You know, I just don't have time. There's, you know, for a start, my partner would say, we've got quite a lot of stuff here you could do for 4 or 5 days if you don't want to be paid. I manage your expectations, but all the while selling the fact that I have got an eye that they obviously like. I've got a style that they like from my work. Then a lot of researching to find out, right, how do you book a couple for a wedding? What do you take payment all up front? Do you take a deposit? What's the contract look like? And how do you manage, you know, how do you manage the workflow of that wedding, you know, the appointments? Luckily, again, for the career that I was still in, then meetings, workflow management and everything else, it is fairly something I was familiar with. So I put down what I probably wouldn't call it a contract, but I put down what I thought should be my terms document. This is what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And took that booking. So I took their 20% for the mm-hmm. fee. I think it was £900, I think. I charged about $1,000 or so.
Hey, Raymond here, and we are going to get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, one comment that I hear often from new photographers is that they want to use their photography to give back by charging affordable prices. Now, I love the nobility of the Beginner Photography Podcast community for that. But quickly, I see those same photographers saying, you know, that they feel burnt out in photography just a few months later. How can you give back when you yourself are burnt out? You can't. Now, photography is not a necessity, and therefore, by definition, photography is a luxury. When you realize that and you start charging and bringing in more money consistently, well, imagine how much more of an impact you can make on your community. Let me show you the step-by-step roadmap absolutely free. This is how I can help make an impact. You can head over to firstphotoclient.com and download my free guide that has everything that you need to start charging for your work and get your first photo client. Now, again, that is firstphotoclient.com. Start making an impact by this weekend. Now, let's get back to today's interview. How did that wedding turn out? Like, when you shot it, you mentioned earlier that you haven't wanted to go back and look at it. I totally understand that. I'm sure a lot of other people do. But how did they react to the photos?
They loved them. And I was really pleased. They really loved them. The venue still, you do use a couple of the photos on their website. So, I think it went well. It was a beautiful venue, and I've been there several times since. It is. So I was dealt a pretty good hand, opening hand. It's a pretty venue. It was a gorgeous blue day. So it was one of the 3 days in the year here that's like that. So it was an outdoor ceremony, which 2 years ago was still relatively rare in the UK because there's different rules to get the weather and the licensing. You can't just get married anywhere in the UK. You have to get a license for a particular building. And so if it's a nice day, you know, if you haven't licensed the bit of the garden, then you can't get married outside.
So
it was and I got some shots now that I think are probably a little bit cheesy. There were some that I thought, right, I'm just going to try this. It might not work. And I think that's really important in whatever genre of photography. If you want to do something a bit different, you've just got to try some stuff. And, you know, especially once all the safer shots are in the bag, just try some crazy stuff, and probably two thirds of it won't work. But occasionally you'll get something that just really works well. And I think on that one, it was I was trying to get a shot of the bride and groom and some bridesmaids, beyond the venue, but in the way was this this old, I think it was a Cadillac, an old 50s Cadillac that they'd used. And I completely messed the focus up and focused on the word Cadillac of this car, and they were in the background out of focus, and that was the front of the album sorted, and it was just a happy accident. But if you know if you're up for just playing with things and seeing what comes out of those sorts of accidents, then I think that's really useful. But yeah, it was great. You know, I did the album for them, took it round. They sat down and they were happy. They've referred me to other people, so I have picked up a booking from them. So I don't think it was just lip service. I think they were quite happy. But I'm sure looking back on it, they probably could have got a better photographer for their first, you know, if they'd looked around. But hey, you know, it's too late now.
What a way to look at it. Yeah, it's too late now. They picked me. That's hilarious. So after that first wedding, did you know at that moment that you wanted to take wedding photography and photography full time to eventually leave your job?
Yeah, I had tried all sorts of photography at that point. So I had this wedding for a while booked in, but all the while I was thinking I'd love music, so I'd love to do band photography. So I was doing all sorts of things like live events, some baby stuff. But the practicalities of it are, if you want to earn serious money, then weddings is where it's at. And I think certainly it's not the only place it's at, but it's one of the easiest places to sort of get a foot in and start. You know, it's where most of us are going to buy photography for as well. You know, it's for a wedding. We're less likely to get our own headshots done or anything like that. That's where I decided to put my focus, and that's when I started. Once I thought I love that place for the wedding, I was nervous, especially now looking back. Then I had my Nikon D750, a 50mm lens, and a 70-300, and that was it. No backup, nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing. So looking back, I think I probably should have been more nervous than I was, because if something had gone wrong, I would have struggled to have fulfilled that task. But I don't think that's particularly unusual. I think probably a lot of us are like that at the start, because you don't want to go out and buy two cameras, you know, from the outset when you can't really afford one.
I don't know how big it is over in the UK, but I know here in the US there's a lot of services where you can rent camera gear, lots of lenses and bodies. If you could go back in time, would you have rented body and lens?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I still have never done, and I think mm-hmm. I probably could have saved myself thousands over the last 3 years of buying lenses, thinking, yeah, now I'm going to switch camera system, selling those, the amount you lose each time. And at the time as well, shooting on a 70-300, you know, 4.5 to 5.6, you know, thank goodness it was a bright day, because I'd have been struggling. Yeah. Right? Much better would have been to rent a 2.8, you know, 7200. I don't know why I didn't, but I just figured that, well, I've got what I need, and I'll limp along. I think I did bring a compact camera with me, like my partner's camera, just to as a backup. But I think that's sailing a bit close. Yeah, that's a bit risky.
Save a few bucks. Yeah, I got that. So after that first wedding, I want to know when and how you made the decision to go full time, and how can the listeners know when it's the right decision to go full time?
Well, I think it's all about having a strategy, and I decided after that first one, when I had a few more in the pipeline, I thought, right, this I want to try and see if I can do this full time and make a decent income from it. I didn't know at that time if that was going to be successful, if I could do that, but I knew that I was going to try to do it. So you have to have that as your long-term aim. Whether you want to do it, I think is a really important decision, because as you know, and lots of people listening will know as well, that once you do go into making it more of a serious thing, then it kind of gets a bit less fun, you know. And
oh yeah,
and now when the kids are doing something pretty cool in the garden, or there's a beautiful sunset, I think, right, can I grab my camera? I think, oh, forget it, can't be bothered. Because I know that all those images will just go to the back of thousands and thousands of wedding images I've still got to edit. So there is that side. If you want to make it a full-time thing because you want to shoot more photos, it might not be the right thing to do, because that's probably the one thing you don't do is shoot more. What you do more of is on Facebook all the time, emailing everybody, editing lots and lots of stuff. You know, the actual shooting bit becomes quite a small portion of the day. But I think that's not to say that if you love taking photos, if you could then be rewarded for doing that, and all the surrounding stuff that does it, that is a great feeling. And I really wanted to have that. And I knew that I had a good chance of doing that. So for me, it was then working out what sort of time period I would need to do that. I knew it wasn't going to take I couldn't do it in a year. I also knew that I couldn't take 10 years to do it. So I couldn't just wait for referrals. It's like you said earlier, Raymond, you can't just get some nice images and put them out there and expect people to come and say, hey, can you be our photographer as well? Because it very rarely happens like that, especially when you're starting. It's like an exponential kind of thing, isn't it? If you've not done many weddings, there's not many people that have seen your work that are going to pick you up. When you've done 500 weddings, it's quite easy, because there's thousands of people that you've met and spoken to and that know your name. So for me, it was a case of working out how to do that in the quickest way possible, and that was Facebook advertising. So I put a lot of effort for me into Facebook to just get as many bookings as possible, and start to see when those started to come in. Right, if I'm getting two bookings a month, how long is it going to be before my pipeline? So I start looking at what that income might be in the next 12 months, next 24 months. At what point is that going to equal my current salary? Because that's the point then that you start to plan to move from one to the other.
Okay, so if somebody's listening right now and they want to eventually leave their full-time job, the number one thing that they need to consider is they need to come up with a plan of how they're going to replace their current income, mm-hmm. which is what it sounded like what you just said, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay,
yep.
So when I get... And I know that I told you this before we started, but I get a lot of emails from people asking to come on to the show. And usually these people are trying to sell some sort of new course or something else to the beautiful people of the Beginner Photography Podcast, right? So I always ask a follow-up question, and just to make sure that they are legit, right? So when I read about your success, I asked you, why do you think photographers struggle so much to get bookings? Why do they struggle so much?
Yeah, and I think that's is because you have to appreciate that you do need good work. You need to have the work there. Most people that want to do it as a career, whether it's wedding or whatever, you would hope that they've got that they've got the quality, they've got the skills there. But there's no point. You can be the best photographer in the world if you're not getting your work in front of the right person at the right time. Then they're not going to book you. And that's where the other side of the coin is, the marketing. And conversely, if you're not a great photographer, but you're a great marketeer, you're just putting poor quality work in front of everybody. So you're wasting your money. So it does need both of those. And I think you can work on those separately. So if you can identify what you need to improve your game technically, to get, you know, your images looking better, and start a course of action to improve that. Now, what I did was a list of things that I wanted to improve in my work. I didn't have time to do it all straight away. Now, a lot of people will have full-time jobs that are very difficult. In the software industry, it certainly as a manager, you've got a bit more advantage that it's desk-based. So during lunch, you can maybe do half an hour of, you know, Googling and reading stuff. A lot of jobs, you just don't have that luxury, you know, if you're a builder, if you're whatever it is, you know, whatever you're doing. So I had to I created a list of I used an online platform to do it, just a list of the things that I thought I needed to know, how long I think I would need, and just try and have that list of tasks. So when you're sat on a bus, when you're sat on a train, you think, well, I've got an hour, let's pick something off the list. And that's you're then making really good use of your time, because it's so easy otherwise to sit just watching TV. And you have to be mindful of the fact you have got a partnership with your partner if you're in a relationship, mm-hmm. and you have to protect that as well, you know, be precious with that. But there is a lot of time where we're just kind of in a standby mode that we could actually
waste time.
Yeah, we're wasting time. The other advantage of having a list like that's prioritized and you know what the important stuff is that every day, most of us are going to have half an hour every day that we could do that, even if it's in the bath and we careful not to drop our tablets in the bath. You've got half an hour, but you feel then that you're making progress. So sometimes when you're really flat out at work and you've got this dream of being a photographer, and it just sometimes seems impossible. But if you've just sent one email that day, or if you've just learnt about focus stacking that day, you feel that you're a little bit further forward. And that's really important, I think, to keep that drive and keep that momentum going.
Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
So when it comes to the booking side of things, I think we talked a little bit about this earlier, is one of the reasons why I think beginners have a hard time making the leap is that they don't know where bookings are going to come from. When I read an article from you that was all about Facebook advertising, and we just talked about Facebook advertising there, is that where you focused all of your attention to get your bookings? And if so, can you kind of walk me through an example of like a Facebook ad strategy?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. I would say that certainly even now, probably half my bookings are through Facebook advertising. In those days, it was all through that because, as I said, those other streams, like I wasn't using Instagram then. Referrals weren't coming through. So it was all about Facebook. The way that I do this, as I've said in that article that you referenced there, is just create, because we're all used to, if we've got a business page, or if you've got a business page for your photography, even if it's a hobby, quite often we've got that. You create a post with some nice images on it, a bit of text, you post that as usual to your page. The main mistake a lot of people make when they first put a foot into the world of Facebook advertising and paid advertising is to boost the post by clicking boost post, because you'd have thought that does exactly what you want, right? But it does it's crap. It doesn't do what you want. It doesn't know that you're trying to target potential brides. All it does is just send that post in front of a mixture of people that may want, that respond well to adverts. So that could be a 16-year-old boy, could be someone who's 90. It's just somebody that is going to be clicking stuff. So you don't want that. So you've made your post. You then have to go into Facebook's Advert Manager. Now, this is a pretty complicated platform, but most of it you just don't need to touch. If you go into there, it's less complicated than it looks. Because all you want to do is target what you can do through the ad manager that you can't do through Boost Post is to target an audience of the right people. So you can't shape that audience who you want to send your advert to. So through the ad manager, you can select women. I don't know what it's like in the US, but in the UK, blokes are never going to book a photographer. Maybe once. I think I've taken two bookings ever. So there's no point, even though you might think, well, there's some that will, but there's no point spending half your budget to target them. You want to keep it as concentrated with the right group. So women between 25 and 50 or 45, that's what I tend to do. Depending, it just depends what your market is. If you're a landscape photographer or family, those are going to all be completely different. So for weddings, I'm talking about. And then you go through and say, I want this audience. So it starts off when I do that. You set a geographical area. So for me, that's about 80 miles around where I live. Mm-hmm. I don't mind traveling. Some people that don't want to travel, set a smaller area. It doesn't matter. That gives me about 200,000 people. I then say I'm only interested in those women in that group that also have their status as engaged to be married. So that then brings it down to about 40,000, and that's then a much more concentrated group of people. So you put that's your audience. Rather than creating a new ad in the creative bit of it, you just select the post that you previously created. And you're going to now just spread that post around to that audience. And it means in their feed, it's going to come up with the advert. So the advert in that post, there's three things you need is your best photos. So some really nice images that are going to grab attention. Some text so people know what you're doing. You're doing wedding photography. I have always put in an offer, even if it's 5%, 10%, doesn't matter. Put your prices up by 10% and put a 10% offer in. But if you don't put an offer in, I've tried this, you won't get anything. So people on Facebook are looking for a bargain. And a call to action. You know, so you're saying, if you would like a no commitment quote, contact me here, PM me, whatever it is. And that, so people are really, it's really obvious what they do. I firmly believe that seems to be anti everything in this space, that you shouldn't push people to your website, because I think you've got them on that platform. Don't let them go. Don't let them walk out the door onto somewhere where you might never see them again. Keep them in there, engage with them in Messenger, keep them into there, get their email, but keep in touch with them on Messenger. And that's the way that I work it. And the other thing I have found that you do have to, and this is tough for a lot of people starting out, you do have to invest, it obviously costs to push these adverts around. And you can go from, I think, $1 to with no upper limit. It just, you know, it will just send it to more and more people. There seems to be, in the UK at least, when I've tried it for $5 a day, that it doesn't even get like a quarter of 20. It just seems it you don't get any feedback at all from it. There seems like there's a low limit that below which you're wasting your $5 a day. I tend to do about $20 a day for 7 days. Now, that is quite a lot. But what I do find is a lot of us will quite often go and spend $500 on a lens that we've got, you know, and unless you've got any means to make that, to for that lens to make you money, then it's just it's because that's a nice thing to buy, isn't it? It's something you own. Whereas something like advertising, it feels like it might be, you're not getting anything concrete from it. But it's worth trying that $20 a day, 7 days, 5 days, whatever your limit is. You know, whatever the budget is. And I typically do $20 for 10 days, and I will normally get between 7 and 10 bookings, wedding bookings from that. Now, what's that? £300. So that's £30 a booking. Now, I've never found a single magazine that I can advertise in or a wedding fair I can attend that will give anything like that performance in terms of the amount of money.
Last, yeah.
Hi, can you hear me, Raymond?
Last year. Reconnecting connection.
Oh, there we go.
Sorry
about that. Yeah, I think it was my end.
I don't know. It's just like you were fine. You've been fine this whole time. There's been no drops or anything. And then all of a sudden, there was just a boop, all gone. So we were talking a little bit about the Facebook ad strategy that you have there and how much to spend on these ads. Now, did it take you a lot of... Okay, I guess I got two questions. First, in the ad that you have, you say obviously give some sort of offer, right? Mm-hmm. But is this like a general ad that you're saying like, look, Nick Church Photography, here are some sample images. If you're interested for your wedding date, here's 10% off or 20% off or whatever, contact me now. Or is it something more than that?
It's a target. So because the advert text has to be tuned to the audience that you're sending it to. So I'm sending it to women that are about to be engaged. They're engaged. So it's all about weddings. It's very clearly stating that I'm a wedding photographer. You know, I wouldn't use the same content and stuff to, if I was doing an architectural post, that would be a completely different set of parameters there. So it's all about weddings. It's say, if you get in touch, I'll be able to give you a quote and you'll get 10% off if you quote this code and you make a code up. So people are very clear what you're offering, what you're going to provide them, what their images are going to look like, because you can share the images there, and how to get in touch. And, you know, you're one click away and people, you know, they get in touch. Often people will leave comments in the post. They'll comment their partner, they'll comment friends or family. And that's great as well, because like I said, you do have to go and meet people halfway. You can't just sit back and wait for those emails to come in any more than you could just put up a website and wait for people to come by and book you. So each of those people that comment, you want to go in and message each of those saying, hey, thanks for commenting. Thanks for showing interest in my post. Would you like a quote? Some people say, oh, that would be great. And then book the next day. But you think, well, why didn't you then contact me? But people just need that bit of a shove sometimes. And if you're polite, yeah, and you're not being spammy and you know, you're not bothering them, then people are really happy for that. And, you know, sometimes they go quiet and you catch up with them a bit later. My workflow system reminds me a few days later to, you know, ping them again and just say, hi, you haven't got back to me. And after a few times, you just let it go because you're diminishing returns. But occasionally they'll say, thanks for keeping in touch. We were looking for a venue. We've now got it. Are you free? Can we see, you know, and again, you're off again and you're having that dialogue with them. The other side benefit is that with this post going around, people, a lot of people like your page as well. So when I put in this $20 a day for 10 days, $200, so I will get 7 to 10 bookings or so, which is great, you know, really great return.
Of course.
You know, compared with advertising, compared with standing at a wedding fair all day, it's amazing. You know, this is why I use it so frequently. But the side benefit is you also pick up 30, 50 likes for my page a day while the advert's running, you know, on top of the usual kind of organic people that come into your page. So right. So you're also boosting that audience of people that the next post you do, which you're not paid for, you're hitting those people again. They're the right people, so you're improving the richness of the people that are liking your page, because you're filling it with engaged women who, if you're,
of course,
as a wedding photographer, that's who you want to see. If you're architectural, then you want to fill it with architects, or landscape, you want people that love art and buy art, and you know, you get it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a great strategy right there, and it's definitely I'm not sure if it's more than what we would pay here in the U.S. I do a lot of Facebook advertising, but I think my strategy is a little bit different. I think that yours is a lot more direct, and I think that's why it works so well. And I think that I'm going to have to give it a try, because, like you said, I mean, you don't know until you try something. So
you have to try.
Thank you for
you have to try. I mean, yeah. It's just you have to, like I said before, you have to give it good enough go that it's got a chance of success, and that. Yeah. Where I see a lot of people, and I've done this myself, and this is what I'm hoping to help people with, is not to make the same mistakes I've done, is I was initially thinking, I don't want to spend $20 a day. That's, you know, a lot of money. There's quite a few beers I can buy for that. But so you put down five quid and it doesn't work. You know, you don't get anything. So you haven't really given it a good try. Try it for, you know, shorten the number of days, because the way the algorithm works is it will give your ad to the people that Facebook thinks are most likely to respond to it. So those first couple of days are going to be the best performing days anyway. So shorten it to 3 days if you're limited on budget, and just see what happens. If nothing happens, stop it. All right, you say you spent $75, but you've gained knowledge that what you did then didn't work, so you're not going to do it again. And that's a really useful thing to have.
Yeah, exactly. So can you kind of give me some of your favorite tools aside from Facebook advertising, favorite tools and techniques that you used in the software development industry and applied them directly to photography?
Sure.
To boost your success?
Yeah, I mean, I'm by nature probably the most disorganized person, I think I know. So
I gotta be a close second.
we'll have to have a disorganized off, but better to see your office looks tidier than mine for a start.
That's just one direction.
So I do need to have this idea of a second brain. I need to have a workflow management system that is telling me when I need to book appointments for couples. So that's something that I've taken straight from when I used to manage larger teams of people, software developers, projects and customers, is just have all that information somewhere. So the one I use is kind of called Light Blue Software, but there's loads of others that are specific to photography. They just, when I get an inquiry, I get it, I put it in there, and it will track the quote, it will let me prepare a quote through it, and all those other stuff. Now, the reason I did that is because I used to have a spreadsheet when I started out, because you want your tools to grow with you. I think you don't want to splash out on expense that you don't know you're going to get value from. So initially, a spreadsheet when you've got five weddings is fine. You're not going to forget them. What I had done was probably let that grow to a point where the cracks were starting to show in that system. I had a spreadsheet and a Google calendar that was linked together. And I was in a meeting actually with some colleagues from San Diego and Mumbai, and old job this was. And I had a text message on my phone saying, "Hi Nick, we're at the venue. We hope you're on your way." And I went white. You can imagine, I went white as a sheet. Everyone said, "Are you okay?" And I was frantic. I didn't have all I had was a phone number. I didn't know who it was. So I got the phone number. I was reverse engineering through my email to see if I could search for that phone number. Eventually found out that it was a venue visit with them, not the actual wedding. And so I did that noise, and then figured, right, this evening I need to buy some better software that's going to be able to track things more responsibly, because I'm just not doing it.
Yeah.
So that's been really useful. The other thing that I swear by is a system called Kanban, which is a Japanese way of task management. And it's effectively, in its simplest form, is you write things on post-it notes and you put them on your wall, but there's online versions, obviously, or apps for your desktop. But you just, you have columns of to do, stuff I need to do, things are in progress, things that are done. And it seems so stupidly simple. But what we do without having that is we start lots of different tasks. We don't ever really finish them. We've got loads of things on the go. And when you've got loads of things on the go, you're really inefficient. And you go down rabbit hole. So you think, oh, I need to do a website. Oh, I need some images. Oh, I better go and take some images of that. And before you know it, you've forgotten about the website and you're off taking photos. And what Kanban lets you do is you just say, I'm going to improve SEO on my website. You put it on a post-it note, you put it on the wall. Then the next thing you say, right, I need to work out focus stacking, right? So you put that on there, you put it on the wall. You think, for my business, is that more important than doing SEO or less important? You think it's probably less important. And so what you end up with is this to-do list of very well prioritized things. So you never look at that again, apart from the top one. When you've got some time, you take the first card off, you put it in your in progress column, and you work on that task until it's finished. So it might be that you're going to improve SEO. So you don't do anything else until you finish that thing. And once it's done, you put it into completed, and the completed column fills up and you get a real sense of achievement because you're moving stuff through. The other thing it's really useful for is you don't gold plate things. So things like website design is a classic thing that if you think, right, I need to improve the website to make it look better, that's really difficult. If you've got no, if you've not said, well, when do you stop that task? Cause you could carry on doing that forever.
Right.
So, sure, okay. So you want to be a bit more specific about what is it? Right. I need to resize the images cause they're slow to load. Now put just that bit on a card and stick it on there. And then you can do those very tangible things, and they become smaller as well. So you can keep that throughput really good. So that's been an absolute godsend, because when I had the full-time job still, I'd made the decision that I was going to try and do this as a career. I knew all the things I needed to do. I needed to get bookings. I had to do an advert. And you have so many ideas, especially for me, it's early in the morning. You get like a load of ideas coming to your head, and the worst thing to do is then start working on those ideas before you've thought, are they going to cost me a fortune? Is it going to take me months of effort? is it actually as important? Because the next day, actually what seemed like a good idea yesterday, you think, actually, I don't think that's a very good idea at all. And if you spent, if you did spend yesterday doing that thing, you've just wasted a day doing something. So when you have these ideas, I could just put them on a card, and you separate your thinking time from your doing time. And that's a really useful thing to, when you've got time constrained. When you're time constrained, like when you've got a full-time job, you want to just say, right, I've got half an hour to do something. Let's pick from that list. And then when you get all these other ideas, you just stick them in the list and do them at the right time. But you don't divert from what you're doing. It just keeps you very focused on what you need to do. And over time, when you're saying, well, I need to get 10 more bookings, I need to have a second shooter in place, you can start to see these things and you think, right, you can see how long it's taking to do each of these things. You can start to get an idea how long it's going to take you to get through all of that stuff, if that stuff is the things you need to do to go full time. And you can start to then schedule your life, you know, what that pathway is going to look like. And for me, it became clear about a year before, and I did have a year where it was insanely busy. So I did 40 weddings in a summer or in a year, alongside
on top of your
full-time job, and it nearly killed me. And so this time last year was when I thought, right, I can't do that again. Now is the time. The systems I had in place, tracking my pipeline, which was based on actual bookings, but also what I thought might come in, you know, prediction based on the year before. When that gets a certain figure, I thought, right, now is the time to do it, because I can't do another year anyway. So you have to do it, and you do get to that point where it's, you know, deal or no deal, there's no way back. And I think that's the exciting time when you're at that point and think, right, I'm just going to go for it now, because you can't not, if you've got bookings, you've got 50 bookings in ahead of you, you know, you can't continue doing a full-time job and not doing that.
Right. Of course. That was a very clear way of describing exactly kind of the workflow process that needs to be done throughout an entire booking. So thank you for sharing that. And just the idea of Kanban is something that that I found probably 2 or 3 years ago, and I can attest to the power of it and how it can just organize almost everything if you really spend time to put in the work. But I want to know, now that you have gone full time, right? You've left your job, you now work from home, you've now gone full time. What is a misconception that people have about going full time?
I think you probably find that you work longer. You're putting more hours in than you did in a, you know, 9-to-5 job, for sure, because the time when you've been working, either out shooting, taking photos or editing, you get back 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening, right, now's the time I'm going to just chill out now and spend some time with my partner. Yeah. That's the time that everyone else is sitting down.
What's that?
But that's what everyone else is thinking. Hey, let's just message that photographer and see if they can take a landscape for our wall, you know? And so you then you sit down and your phone's going crazy. And so you do have to compartmentalize your time a bit, which is extremely difficult when you have a potential booking coming in. So you lose a bit of time, but what I love is that you are in absolute control of success and failure. And if you do a shoot that's you're not happy with, you've got no one else to blame. You look in the mirror and you can say, well, that's, you know, if you learn something from it, then it's still a positive thing. You think, wow, I didn't deal with the poor light very well at all in that shoot. I need to up my game. I need to do this next time. And that's been, you know, and that's really productive, because you can then go straight into your next shoot with a refreshed attitude about what you're going to do differently. So that's one thing. I think the other side of, as I said, it being that you're just going to be a creative that sits there in coffee shops and edits and all those things, you know, sometimes it is just really hard graft of plowing through emails, messaging clients, doing loads of editing, advertising campaigns and those sorts of things. It's a huge number of other things that I didn't imagine I'd be doing as much of as I am, but the reward is that it's something that's mine and it's taking the business further forward. And that's something I could never give up. And I do wish that I'd done it years before. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting to hear. But I hear the exact same thing from a lot of other photographers. You know, they have this lofty idea that once they go full time, it's just free time except for when you're shooting, that you can dedicate all your time to shooting, which there's a lot more time that you can dedicate. But like you said, it is there's so much more that goes into it than just shooting. Mm. And it's not even just like other photographers. Like, even though that's like the dream, like, oh, that'd be so great. It's everybody. Like, every time we go out to dinner with like my wife's friends, one of my wife's friends made a joke the other day that I don't work. She's like, but you don't work. And I was just like, oh my God. I felt like, you know, triggered right there. I was like, well, did you just, you have no idea, you know, yeah. But it's that misconception. And, you know, I can't blame her for thinking that. But once you figure that out, once you figure out what it is that you're doing and how to do it proficiently enough to earn an income from it, like you said, there's nothing better in the world than that feeling of being in control of your own success. Yeah. So
no, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that. I want to know if you had to go back to 2014, right? That flight that you took when you were trying to learn the camera, if you could go back to that date, is there something that you would tell yourself? Is there something that today Nick Church would tell that Nick Church that could help them along their journey to get here faster?
What would I say? I would certainly for a while I was convinced that going into, you know, do I go into too technical stuff? But I was convinced that this Micro Four Thirds camera was going to be fine for everything, and I invested too heavily in lenses for it. Thinking, well, I need a zoom lens for a decent zoom lens for weddings and that kind of thing. And even before the first wedding, once my knowledge had improved a bit, I thought this is going to be quite hard to use this camera. And where we are now with mirrorless is quite a different place than we were in 2013, 2014. So, that was one thing I think is take time to think, right, what do I need? What if I'm going to buy a piece of equipment, what problem am I expecting that lens to solve? You know, what is it that's got, if I'm, you know, and that's even, I think it's easier to get on that, to have that problem when you're running your own business, because you think, oh, I probably could do with a new laptop this year, but is there a problem with the current one that you're not solving? Or do you just want to buy a new laptop because it's kind of cool to, you know, and I'm a sucker for that. And I do struggle with that quite a lot. And so that's something that I would definitely try and start off without having that problem in place.
Just trying to buy like as basic as possible. Is that it?
Just get the tools that you need, you know, work out what do you need to do. A classic example is last year I went to a Sony system from Nikon. So I sold all of my lenses, bought Sony kit, which was fabulously expensive, and I love it, you know, but it hasn't solved any problems that I had. I was doing pretty well with Nikon, and it's not helped me get any more shoots. It's not earned me any more money than I would have done with Nikon. It was just a cool thing to do, but not particularly sensible from a business perspective.
Gotcha.
You know? If there was, you know, if you're a travel photographer and you're shooting scenes in Central Africa, say, and you want to travel light, then maybe a mirrorless system then does make sense, and that does solve a problem you've got, because you haven't got tons of stuff to carry, gear to carry around. So it's just you know, horses for courses, I think, in who you are and what you're trying to achieve, and get the right tools in place at the right time and not too early. You know, and a good example is as I said, with having a spreadsheet. If I'd had a huge management system from day one, then it would have cost me, you know, the monthly fee, and I never would have used it until that first thing. So it's finding the right time. I think you do it too early or too late, and just try and identify when it is.
I'd never even thought of it like that way. Because obviously picking up a CRM is going to be pretty expensive to get some sort of client management software. And if you don't have enough work coming in, you're probably just going to neglect the whole system.
That's right. That's,
I never had to think about that. So thank you. What is, as somebody who recently started, right, and kind of has gotten to where you are now, along your journey, was there any commonly taught information that you think is just poor information for new photographers to hear or learn?
Well, I did find that. Things like that if you've got a great website, you know, that's the main thing, get people to go to your website. That's what it's all about. It's all about SEO. And I just don't think it is. And I'm not saying that if my website had better SEO and I put more effort into it, I wouldn't have more direct bookings. I may well have done, but I've also got to the point I am now without doing that, you know, so that isn't as important, I don't think. Another one I think is, there's the SEO side. Ask the question again, Raymond. Sorry, I've gone off track there.
No worries. What is some commonly bad information that you hear being taught to beginners?
The other thing I heard quite a lot of it through forums and just through YouTube videos is that don't expect to earn a huge amount of money. There's no rich photographers, and I think that's completely untrue. It just depends what. It depends what, if that's what your goal is. If your goal is to make money through photography and you've got the right strategy in place, then you can do that. And so that's something that I'm really pleased that I've been able to prove wrong, because I couldn't afford it not to be. As you said at the start here, I did have a good career. It was quite scary to leave it after so long. You have a security in a responsible position in a company, and to leave that and just go out on your own with something completely different that arguably you've only been spending a couple of years working on is really, you know, can be risky if you don't have the right strategy in place. But I was able to get it to that point that it was paying the same, which had the double-edged problem of, for 1 year, I was earning almost twice the salary because the wedding photography business was up and running and I was still doing another one. So this, for the first year last year, was quite tough because I've gone back, but that's a nice problem to have. Right. I mean, that's another thing. And I think that you have to know, you know, I can't even give an example because I didn't do this, but you have to read the book by such and such. And if you don't read that, you're not going to be able to take good photos because they'll know more. And if you don't read them, then you're somehow disrespecting the industry because, you know, right. It's crap. There's lots of ways to do it. Yes, you can do it that way, or you can decide, possibly because I've come from more of an art background, that you probably don't want to just spend time learning how other artists do it. You want to work out, how am I going to communicate what I want to achieve in my photos? Mm-hmm. And that might be completely different. And perhaps not reading the book that everyone reads is the right thing to do. So rather than saying don't read or do read, it's more about there's no one way to do it. The way that works for you is the right way to do it. And, you know, everyone comes to a position of success in any business loads of different ways. That's why there's so many people that are multi-billionaires that have never been to college. You know, that's why there's not just one way to do it.
Yeah, right. I mean, if there was, then that would be the book to read, yeah. Right?
and I'd be writing it if I could, for an opportunity.
I probably wouldn't read it, only because, like you, I don't pick up anything from reading, really. Yeah. I too have to go out there and do, but I know other photographers personally who they've learned everything about photography from reading books. So thank you for sharing that perspective, that you really have to be self-aware, you know,
I think that's a really good word for it. You've got to be self-aware of your work, your photography itself, and that means if you can either pick up in other people what you want to achieve, the bits of their photos you want to try and achieve and use to give that same feeling, then that's great. But also get critique from other people people that you trust, not just people on Facebook when you know they're going to just slate your photos regardless. People that can give you an honest appraisal of, you know, what your photos are like. I think that's something that you have to be quite brave, but it's better to know before you start paying for your marketing that your images aren't quite up there, because you've then got the opportunity to say, right, what can I do to get to the point before you start spending money? Then you're just selling the wrong products, and you miss that opportunity. So that's really important. I think, you know, getting your own style is very important as well. And I think so it's learning from others, getting critique, but also making sure that because the goal for most photographers, rightly, is that when you see a photo, it's kind of cool if it looks like a Nick Church photograph or a someone else photograph, and you can kind of tell who it's taken by, because you've got a style, and it takes a while for that to happen. But you can't just do that, and you can't just follow other people either.
Right. That was good. I think if anybody's going to pick up anything from this episode, that's going to be a big piece of it right there for sure. So going from this is my last question here for you, and it's kind of a fun one. I know that I say this every episode. We've gone way over our time. I get so excited asking questions and talking. I do this every time. I apologize. Going from starting, having never picked up a camera again, to where you are today in a very short window of time, and as somebody who, like myself, has to do something to be able to learn something, I'm sure that you've made a few mistakes along the way, right? Have you ever had an embarrassing moment on the job that you'd be willing to share?
Almost every shoot, I think there's something. Because the thing that happens almost probably 50% of the time is that I forget to format my images before I take photos. So I've always got bunch of cards. So I know that I do this. So I've always got maybe half a dozen 64 gig cards in my pocket, because I know I do this all the time. So I just forget to format them, record 100 images on the card, and then it runs out of space. And you can neither format the card then, because you've got the images, so you have to swap it out but not lose that image. And then when you get back, I've got 15 cards from a shoot because I've done it on both cameras. So that happens frequently.
Have you ever accidentally formatted a card that had a undelivered wedding?
I haven't done that. Thankfully, I've knocked my camera into low quality JPEG mode for some dancing shots at the end of the day, and I was pleased that I did it in that last hour and not the first hour, because I just didn't notice. So that's one for sure. What else have I done? Things often, because I take quite a few of my bookings without meeting people, just the way, you know, about half of them I don't meet people. So that first meeting, sometimes you don't, when you get to a wedding, I sometimes don't know, especially if it's a bride and they're all in the same pajamas. I don't know who's who. And there was one time where I had spent 90 minutes shooting what I assumed was the bride, and it turned out it wasn't, and I only picked it up. But then I thought, I don't know how to get out of this now without making it too obvious. So I just then took loads of photos of all the others to try and dilute the problem, which in hindsight, I'd been better off saying, "Oh my God, I'm sorry. I've just, you know, I assumed you were the bride." But anyway, so yeah, so I ended up with over 1,000 bridal prep images to deliver, because I've just taken many to try and cover up the mistake.
Yeah. I can totally see myself doing that. Absolutely. And what's bad is that I meet with all of my couples before the wedding. I'm sure that I don't know if it's like face blindness or like when you show up, you know, they're in makeup and they look different than when you first met them. But I always walk in the room like, okay, I'm not going to say anything until somebody like Raymond like points me out. I'm like, oh, hey, there you are. Because they would be the only one. But that would totally be something that I would do. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Nick, like I said, we've gone over our time. You've been incredibly gracious with your time. You've answered a ton of questions that I know that the listeners are going to get a lot of value out of. If they want to find more of you online, can you share where is the best place to do that?
Yeah, the best place is the usual suspects, and my Facebook and Instagram are both at Nick Church Photography. So that's NICKCHURCH Photography, Nick Church Photography. So yeah, please connect on Insta and Facebook, and any comments or messages or questions, I answer every question I get, because I know that when I was a couple of years ago, I had a ton of questions, and quite often you get nothing back from people, and I definitely don't want to be that guy. So I will always respond. My website as well is www.nickchurchphotography.co.uk.
So there you have it, man. Nick, that growth is incredibly impressive. And as somebody who I thought that I went full time pretty quick, but it was not in 24 months. And I certainly was not booking, 40 weddings whilst they're working a full time job. So
Nick, obviously you're doing things right, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. And we got to get you back on later to share some more and go more in depth, maybe on a singular topic, to really dive deep into this stuff, because you clearly know what you're doing. And I'm excited to see your growth for the future. Like I said at the beginning, I think that you are going to become a photographer who is very well known for your work, and I'm excited to kind of be a part of that somewhat near the beginning and just continue to watch your growth. If you're listening right now, I want to know what your biggest takeaway was from this episode. You can do so by sharing it in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. I want to know, was there something in this episode that is going to push you to going full-time in your photography? Is there something that you felt you weren't getting, you didn't understand about being full-time, or what it takes to make that leap, and something that Nick shared that was this aha moment for you? I really want to know what that is. So come on over to the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. Share what that was. All right. And that is it for today's interview. I want you to get out there, keep shooting, maybe go to a local coffee shop and ask if you can hang some free prints on their wall. I know Jason did that a year ago. Jason in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. And that's huge. It takes a lot of courage. He did it. They were hung up. That is awesome, you know? So get out there, keep shooting, try to hang your portraits in a coffee shop. Focus on yourself and stay safe. All right, that is it for this week. Until next time, I'll see you. I really screwed that up. I'll see you next week. I love you all.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a review in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And continue the conversation with Raymond and other listeners of the podcast by joining the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group today. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.